This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Health and Healing. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by African News Panorama. We shall close today's program with our segment dedicated to the Jubilee of Hope. I am Festus Tarawali. There was no general audience on Wednesday as Pope Francis continues to receive treatment for pneumonia in both of his lungs at Rome's Gemelli Hospital. However, the Holy See Press Office released the text of the Pope's catechesis prepared for this week. In the catechesis, the Holy Father reflects on the visit of the three kings to the child Jesus. Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
As Pope Francis receives ongoing medical care at Rome's Gemelli Hospital for double pneumonia, he has called on the faithful to embrace the irrepressible joy of the child Jesus following the three kings' example. Since his medical team has ordered complete rest, the Pope asked the Holy See Press Office to publish the text that had been prepared for his Wednesday general audience. In his catechesis, the Pope focused on the visit of the three kings to the newborn Jesus as he continued to explore the gospel narratives which recount the Lord's infancy. The Pope examines their journey and visit to the Christ child, underscoring that when the Magi depart, the star reappears and leads them to Jesus. This, he observed, is a sign that creation and the prophetic word are the alphabet, he noted, by which God speaks and allows himself to be found. The sight of the star, he wrote, inspires an irrepressible joy in those men, because the Holy Spirit, who stirs the heart of whoever sincerely seeks God, also fills it with joy. In fact, upon entering the house, the Magi, the Holy Father noted, prostrated themselves, worshipped Jesus, and offered him the most precious gifts, worthy of a king, worthy of God. The Magi, he noted, become the first believers among all the pagans. Dear brothers and sisters, the Pope encouraged, let us place ourselves in the school of the Magi, these pilgrims of hope, who, with great courage, directed their steps and their hearts, as well as their possessions, toward the Lord, who is the hope not only of Israel, but of all nations. Pope Francis concluded his address by inviting all the faithful to likewise offer the Christ child the most beautiful gifts, in order to express to him our faith and our love. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
Pope Francis has been in hospital since Friday when he was admitted after suffering from a bout of bronchitis for 2 weeks. In an early update on Wednesday on the Pope's health, the director of the Holy See Press Office said he slept well. He had a tranquil night, woke up and had breakfast, Matteo Bruni said. Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin has just concluded a visit to Burkina Faso on the occasion of the 125th Jubilee celebrations of Catholic evangelization in the country. During the visit, the Cardinal expressed the Holy See's support for the West African nation's ongoing efforts to restore peace and promote development amidst an Islamist insurgency. Speaking to journalists after an audience with the country's military ruler, Captain Ibrahim Traoré, on Monday, Cardinal Parolin recognized the Catholic Church's ongoing commitment to addressing the nation's material and spiritual needs. He also lauded the good relationship between the Holy See and Burkina Faso. I brought the greetings of Pope Francis and best wishes for Burkina Faso, for the population, and for peace to reign in this country, Cardinal Parolin said. Meanwhile, the Catholic organization that supports suffering, oppressed and persecuted Christians, Aid to the Church in Need, has called for prayers after dozens of people were killed in terrorist attacks in western Burkina Faso and for two catechists killed by bandits in the region. The 42nd Niwano Peace Prize has been awarded to Musawa, a global women's movement dedicated to gender justice and equality in the Muslim family. The Niwano Peace Foundation said Musawa was awarded in recognition of its immense efforts to strengthen citizenship and peaceful coexistence in diverse societies and to create context and platforms for interfaith dialogue and spiritual solidarity. The Niwano Peace Prize was established to honor and encourage individuals and organizations that have contributed significantly to interreligious cooperation. The awards ceremony will take place in Tokyo, Japan on the 14th of May. Lisa Zengarini reports.
According to a statement released on Tuesday by the Niwano Peace Prize Committee, Musawa has been selected for its significant contribution to the cause of women's leadership in interfaith dialogue for human rights protection and peaceful coexistence, which align with the principles of the prestigious Peace Award. Founded in 2009 by Zainah Anwar from Malaysia and Ziba Mir Hosseini from Iran, the organization brings together advocates, scholars and activists to challenge gender biases entrenched in laws and practices while promoting positive reforms for women's rights in Muslim countries. Since its inception, the movement has grown into a vast network that spans over 40 countries, including regions in Asia, the Middle East, Africa, and the Global North. The statement recalled that a key aspect of Musawa's work is its focus on education and leadership development. The network has launched several training programs aimed at increasing women's participation in leadership roles within Muslim contexts. Furthermore, Musawa collaborates with various stakeholders, including legal professionals, religious leaders and social service organizations, to advocate for legislative and policy changes that promote gender justice. Beyond legal advocacy, the organization actively combats gender-based violence by organizing workshops, training sessions and awareness campaigns. All these initiatives, concluded the Niwano Peace Prize Committee, are an excellent fit with the values and mission of the foundation, which aims to recognize and encourage those who significantly contribute to interreligious cooperation, fostering global peace. I am Lisa Zengarini.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
News Panorama.
I am Father Paul Samasumo. Uganda has discharged the last 8 patients who were recovering from an Ebola outbreak declared last month. The country's health authorities confirmed this on Tuesday. The World Health Organization described the recoveries as a milestone and commended Uganda for its speedy response to the outbreak. Most of the Ebola patients were treated at the main referral facility in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Ugandan officials documented at least 265 contacts from the initial infections. Reuters reports that the Rwandan-backed rebels consolidate their hold on the city of Bukavu in the Democratic Republic of Congo. There is a sense of anxiety beginning to grip the capital city, Kinshasa, located about 2,000 kilometers away. Much of the anxiety stems from the limited Congolese army resistance that was witnessed when the M23 rebels took over Goma and Bukavu. The Congolese army did not seem to have put up much of a fight. Embassies in Kinshasa are said to be slowly evacuating some of their non-essential staff. Some of them have been moved to nearby Congo Brazzaville. There is also talk of a possible coup in Kinshasa. More than 3,000 people have been killed in the clashes between the Congolese government forces and the rebel Rwandan-backed M23 group. The rebels have captured large Congolese cities, including Goma and Bukavu. Rwanda continues to reject allegations from Congo, the United Nations and Western countries that it is supporting the M23 rebels with arms and troops. So far, a hunt for a diplomatic solution seems to be eluding the international community. And now to another conflict. The Sudanese government has accused the Kenyan government of hostility after it allowed the Rapid Support Forces RSF rebels to host its activities at the Kenyatta International Convention Center. Sudan says Kenya has violated the principle of good neighborliness by allowing RSF rebels access to one of its premier convention centers, hosting leaders of a terrorist RIS militia and allowing them to conduct political and propaganda activities constitutes an endorsement of and complicity in the heinous crimes, Sudan said. The Kenyan government has denied the accusation and said they are only supporting negotiations. The Sudanese government further called on the international community to condemn the hostile act by the Kenyan government. You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
You are welcome to Health and Healing. In our edition of Millennium Appointment on Monday this week, we reported on how the recent abrupt suspension of United States foreign aid by President Donald Trump was affecting humanitarian efforts and some social services. In this edition of Health and Healing, we examine how it is affecting the delivery of health services with a special focus on HIV/AIDS. Winnie Byanyima is the Executive Director of the Joint United Nations Program on HIV and AIDS, known as UNAIDS. She was one of the people who participated last week in the International Conference on Tax Reform organized by the Vatican. She spoke to Vatican Radio.
The work we do is to lead and coordinate the global HIV response so that all countries, rich and poor, can fight and end this disease. We are determined to end it by 2030. The biggest concentration of this epidemic is in Africa. About 75% of the people living with HIV are in Africa. But it's also the region that has been making the fastest progress in terms of reducing new infections and reducing deaths. But also, it's been able to do that with strong support, global support from rich countries. And today we are seeing declines in this assistance at a time when the same African countries have huge challenges of climate disasters, debt repayments that are swallowing up investments in social services, conflict, and so many other challenges.
So you mentioned the decline in Western assistance. Recently, obviously, there's been the news.
It was very, very sudden, very disruptive, probably the biggest disruption since the fight against this disease. We are globally 73% funded by the United States. The United States alone has its own bilateral program called PEPFAR, and then it also contributes one-third of the resources of the Global Fund, which includes many other donors. So in total, the United States has been leading very strong in the fight against HIV in the developing countries that cannot afford to pay for their full responses. Now that was frozen immediately. We then showed that this was going to lead to deaths, and the United States administration then gave a waiver about a week later. But still, with the waiver, there is a lot of confusion in countries about what can and cannot be paid. And already thousands of health workers in many countries have been laid off, contracts of civil society groups cancelled and restarting. It isn't clear what is going to be restarted and what is not. The whole point is that the United States administration, we would want them to consider a transition that is orderly. It can't be right to drop the ball when people's lives depend on some medication they get every single day, babies are born, and there is mother-to-child transmission. If mothers are not put on treatment in time and are helped not to transmit.
Thinking about this fight against HIV/AIDS, what role do you think that religious institutions can play?
We've seen a major disruption in services. Prevention, testing, treatment services are disrupted in many countries, and we need to get them back full force. We need to get other donors also to increase their investment, because these countries are not going to be able to find the money immediately to keep their people alive. Faith-based organizations have been very important players in championing global solidarity to fight this disease. We want them to step up their voice and call for justice for people who live with HIV, and to call for humanity, call for global solidarity to keep this response going, particularly to call on European countries to increase their contributions to fill the gap, but also to ask the United States to reconsider and keep the response going as we work with governments to take over in an orderly and gradual way. So faith-based organizations have been leaders, particularly on fighting stigma, fighting discrimination, and these are the real reasons why so many people are still not on treatment, because they are hounded by, or there are barriers to receiving services because they are discriminated and there's stigma against them. The churches, the mosques have been instrumental here, and we need them now to speak more forcefully and to persuade governments to step in. People's lives are at stake.
Is there anything else you want to add before we end the interview? Maybe, I don't know, I thought about the importance of today's event as well, and, yes, and the role of taxation.
At this very important meeting on taxation, we are calling for a global tax convention where every country can sit at the table and agree on how to close tax loopholes that are denying developing countries the resources they need to invest in social services, health, education, social protection, and to develop their infrastructure. $88.6 billion that Africa loses in illicit financial flows every year could turn around the continent, be invested in the lives of people. It's significant that the Vatican, the Pope, has convened this meeting and is framing this question of tax injustice as a moral issue, not just an economic issue, and leading, and so calling on other faith organizations to join this push on debt restructuring, on reform of the global tax system, on progressive taxation, taxing the rich. These are the things that will deliver the resources needed to deliver on the right to health, the right to education, the right to social protection.
Winnie Byanyima, the executive director of the joint United Nations program on HIV and AIDS, known as UNAIDS. She was speaking there last Thursday to Joseph Tarlok here in the Vatican after the International Conference on Tax Reform. Our deepest sympathies to Winnie for the suffering she's going through after her husband, Dr. Kizza Besigye, a prominent opposition politician in Uganda, went on a hunger strike to put pressure on the government of Uganda to release him from a maximum prison after the Supreme Court ruled last month that the military court martial which was trying him did not have the authority to try civilians. The trial in the military court followed what his lawyers said was his abduction in November last year by Uganda government agents from neighboring Kenya, who accused him of illegally possessing a gun and of planning to overthrow the government of President Yoweri Museveni. Prison officials rushed him to hospital at the weekend after his health deteriorated. Medical doctors who examined him said his life was in danger. And that was Health and Healing for this week. This has been John Baptist Tumusime.
Pilgrims of Hope, a weekly program of news, views, and reflections on the Jubilee Year 2025.
Hello, it's another wonderful day, and I'm so glad to welcome you once again to today's segment of our weekly program, Pilgrims of Hope, on the ongoing Great Jubilee Year of 2025. My name is Sister Mary Jane Claire Anikwe, and I'm here once again to journey with you towards Christ our hope. The past week has been so busy here in the Vatican as we witnessed a very great sight of over 40,000 military and security personnel from all over the world. According to the Jubilee calendar, the 8th to 9th of February 2025 was set apart for the event of the Jubilee of Armed Forces, Police and Security Personnel, which is dedicated to all those in military and security professions. The event, which began on the morning of Saturday, 8th February 2025, was a significant moment of prayer and reflection, as the activity began with a pilgrimage to the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica, Vatican City. After this spiritual exercise of passing through the Holy Door, the participants all processed to Piazza del Popolo in Rome, which means People's Square, 4.5 kilometers away from the Vatican, where they were officially welcomed by the Italian Army Interforce Music Band, who played the Italian national anthem. There were also other forms of displays by the band group. In addressing the participants, Archbishop Rino Fisichella, pro-prefect of the Dicastery for Evangelization, and who is also in charge of organizing the Jubilee, welcomed all present and reminded them of the importance of the role of security force in the fight for peace, as men and women who are committed to the service of the institutions and of global good. The following day, on Sunday, 9th February, during the celebration of the Holy Mass at the Basilica Square to conclude the event, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, in his homily, welcomed all the military personnel that were present for the occasion. As he entrusted them to Christ, so also their efforts in carrying out their work in the service of humanity. He urged them to constantly turn to Christ in prayer as a source of strength for their important duties. Pope Francis went ahead to appeal to them to constantly reflect on the profound purpose of their life of service, that is, the promotion and defense of life. In his words, he said, "Be courageous witnesses of the love of God the Father, who wants us to live as brothers. Be vigilant against the temptation to cultivate a spirit of war, and do not give in to the propaganda of hatred." He reminded them of the mission that has been entrusted into their hands, that is, that of defending our nations, maintaining security, and upholding legality and justice, so that through their services we come to learn from them that goodness can prevail over everything. The Holy Father appreciated all the military chaplains, that is, those priests who, according to him, are in the midst of these security personnel to offer spiritual support, listening to them in support of their daily service, and in order to help them carry out their mission as security personnel in the light of the gospel and in the pursuit of the common good. The Holy Father beckoned on all present to follow the example of Jesus Christ at the Lake of Gennesaret, according to the Gospel of Luke, who performed three symbolic acts. He saw, he went aboard, he sat down. That in seeing, they may have a careful eye to see the threats on security, and also eyes filled with compassion and tenderness towards the needs and pains of the people. And that as Jesus went aboard Simon Peter's boat, they may not only see evil in order to report, but also board the storm-tossed boat, working to ensure that things does not go wrong, and be committed to face difficulties with courage. Finally, that in sitting down as Christ did, their presence in the cities and neighborhoods may be one that uphold law and order, so that through them the values of justice may be firmly defended. At the end of the Holy Mass, the Holy Father appreciated all those in the armed forces and security forces for their commitment, noting the risk they face daily, the dangerous moments they put themselves into in order to offer us protection and encouragement. He went ahead to invite them to never forget the purpose of their service, which is to promote life, to save life, and to defend life always. In his final words, Pope Francis said, "Be courageous witnesses of God our Father, who wants us all to be brothers and sisters. Together then, let us set out to be artisans of a new era of peace, justice and fraternity. The Jubilee of Armed Forces was indeed an occasion of spiritual reflection, opportunity to share the value of peace, and a period of renewal of hope to all the participants, especially those who have already lost hope in the system. And this brings us to the end of today's segment of our program, Pilgrims of Hope. Thank you so much for being an active participant of our weekly program on the English-African section of Vatican Radio. Stay tuned next week at this same time. I am your companion on the journey, Sister Mary Jane Claire Anikwe. Jubilee Prayer.
Father in heaven, may the faith you have given us in your Son, Jesus Christ, our brother, and the flame of charity enkindled in our hearts by the Holy Spirit, reawaken in us the blessed hope for the coming of your kingdom. May your grace transform us into tireless cultivators of the seeds of the gospel. May those seeds transform from within both humanity and the whole cosmos in the sure expectation of a new heaven and a new earth, when, with the powers of evil vanquished, your glory will shine eternally. May the grace of the Jubilee reawaken in us pilgrims of hope, a yearning for the treasures of heaven. May that same grace spread the joy and peace of our Redeemer throughout the earth. To you, our God, eternally blessed, be glory and praise forever. Amen.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Culture and Society and News for Young People. I am Festus Tarawali, and do join us then. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.